Let's first get to the question of the Periclean speech. It is part of the syngraphy of Thucydides. It is part of the syngraphy. Usually called the Peloponnesian War. He didn't know it that he had written the Peloponnesian War. It's called the syngraphy. A write-up. And there he gives the phenomena of what he calls akinesis. Kinesis is a technical term meaning rapid movement of a feverish type, a disease. The whole history of the Peloponnesian War is deliberately a description of a social fever or disease, of which he wants to describe the eidos. Eidos at that time in the Hippocratic ethics means what we call a syndrome. The syndrome is a later word by Galenian medicine. So the eidos or idea is the word for the syndrome. And the Platonic Aristotelian conception of idea in eidos, which we usually use without referring it back to the former meaning, is deliberately the attempt to form, if you can use the term in that connection, as a syndrome of health, as against the syndrome of the disease developed by Thucydides. So that is internal self-interpretation of Plato and Aristotle, how after the obvious disease of the society in which they are themselves living, could one give a model, a paradigm of a healthy state? Now, I wouldn't call it a utopia, you see. It's a paradigm of a healthy state based on the analysis of existential order. And in that sense, it is entirely realistic.
Really?
It is absolutely realistic, and both Plato and Aristotle there, that is the important part of their political science. They are perfectly clear about it, that this realistic model of hell could not be made practical in society, because social processes, once they are diseased, have to run their course in the disease. And you can't repair a society simply by knowing what's better for the people. So that is a very important factor also for the interpretation of the present, you see. One can have all sorts of true conceptions about what personal order or social order should be, but that doesn't help you in the least in practical politics, because the disease will run its course.
Interesting. This is the final point, then. Children spend their life making such a structure of ideas, without hope of relevance to the actual.
Oh, well, they are quite explicit in that. It's the service of the gods. Because the philosopher is a servant of the gods. And he has to be the servant of the gods even if the society is around going to hell.
Yes. They seem to have a certain plurality to our own
servants of God. You have mentioned, for example, that in fact the Platonic, while his own, we say, model wasn't realizable then, that it has survived as an, I would say, an ideal or paradigm to our time. Like it has survived while the Greek society collapsed, the Polish collapsed, we say. That in fact his model.
The actual vocabulary for existential order was developed by Plato and Aristotle and is still practically unimproved today. We still have the same vocabulary.
Could you say more on that? That's a category that occurs in the new science of politics.
I
didn't study it in great detail, you know, but I had a feeling that it had a lot to do with the kind of conditions of survival of society.
Existential categories are, I think you can enumerate them, you have a language problem. A man is in existential order if he lives in the tangent towards the divine ground of his existence. The divine ground is the archi or protearchi. For that he is in search, sethesis, fundamental category. The philosophers search for this right order. In this search, he is moved from the divine side, kinesis being moved. That is, in kinesis, as the two experiences, I am in search and I am moved to search. Or then in some Platonic mystical formulations, that the golden cord of reason that pulls, but you do not always follow the same pull, but follow another pull. By the way, that pull that held Cain is also such an existential category, is the same category as the Gospel of St. John. Everywhere, okay, no. You see, but here you have the language in which you describe existence. And this language is still the language which we are using today, and not very much more, because they have analyzed these problems of the pulls, of the search, of being moved, you know? And so on, and the consequences for them, the organization of life in terms of virtues, of phronesis and so on, of the philia, especially then the philia as the love of God, which is the common bond in society, the homonoia. All men are of the same mind, the same nous, if they are in philia towards the divine. And the homonoia is still the category in which we have to think. Say, still in American sociology, for instance, I remember in the 1920s, you simply use the King James Version translation of homonia, the like-mindedness, as a substance category for society. And when you were a secularist in the next room, like Giddings in Columbia University, you would use the consciousness of kind. This was the same as like-mindedness or homonia of Dewey. So these are still the categories in which we think. And they were developed there, on that occasion.
And then does the search for the divine ground of being have no relevance in modern politics? Is man
generally the search for modern politics? Man is still in the same, engaged in the same search, as you can find out easily, because I make all these discoveries when you talk with students. they have all these fantastic beginnings, you see. They are, you might say, left alone by the professors who should be in the university. They don't tell them anything. And then the next thing is they read the I Ching. Because it's nice and romantic and Chinese and they have the great wisdom of the East. When I didn't tell them, you know, I Ching is all right, but you won't understand it anyway because it's much too compact and too complicated. Why don't you take it easy and read, for instance, say, the Symposium of Plato? It works. That's what they're interested in.
You went to leave modern politics, and does not seem to incorporate this search.
No, you cannot say that, you see, because modern politics is an abstraction. We have all sorts of stratifications in modern politics. We have, you might say, a mass media way of talking about politics, which is an intellectual mess. You cannot characterize it anyway. Then you have, say, the wise people, wise guys, you see, as I'm using the American slang, who believe if you are pragmatically calculated, you get the right thing. That's the pragmatic level. But then you get also all these people who understand perfectly well that there's a problem of personal existence, and if you frustrate the personal existence of too many people, you get into trouble. For instance, you have, again, when I may refer to this very turmoil of the presidential election, you know, there is now, you might say, a very solid consciousness permanently discussed in the newspapers, you know, that there is an American people in existence, which live as Christian and Christian families and so on, and they get simply disgusted when these New York intellectuals tell them what's right.
Yeah, but it would seem that in the modern order, it should be such that you can order so that people's personal existence is not frustrated.
Yes, but it is different.
But is that not then the search? The reason for politics is to order society in that way.
Yes, to other society, but in the right way. Because because if you do it in the wrong way, say, by getting an idea of modernity, modernity consists in having big industries, and then you transfer that idea, which these people learn, say, in the London School of Economics, by some African boy, then he becomes a prime minister, God knows where, isn't it? And then you have the big industry there, and the meanwhile, the countryside is in starvation.
Yeah.